Welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. I'm your host, Dana Montes of Real Food with Dana. I'm a nutritionist and body image coach, teaching women how to heal their relationship with food and their bodies, ditch the diet cycle for good, and truly thrive with real food, one delicious meal at a time. Episode 74 of the Real Talk with Dana podcast. I am your host, Dana, if you couldn't tell that from the episode title, just in case you're new around here. You know, this week we have a returning guest, Paige Kinsella of Imperfect Paige. She was on episode 62, and we talked about her personal health journey from being a recovering perfectionist, from having an eating disorder to getting diagnosed with an autoimmune disease and the Epstein-Barr virus, thyroid issues, and basically all of the things, and how she's been navigating that since she just recently moved to Manhattan, which is not the most stress-free place to be recovering and trying to figure out all of that kind of stuff. So this episode, we're checking in with how Paige is doing, and we're talking about how not to fall into old habits of people-pleasing and perfectionism when you move to a new place or you're starting a new job. And then the meat of this episode is pretty juicy. We are talking about finding the middle ground between advice from the eating disorder recovery community / the anti-diet community on one side and autoimmunity and the autoimmune protocol on the other side. Because if you're dealing with either both of these issues currently, or you have a history of perfectionism, or you've dealt with these things in the past, following the advice of either one of those sides alone can be very triggering, either physically with symptoms, whether you have some kind of relapse or if you have some kind of remission or anything like a flare-up with your autoimmune disease, or mentally, emotionally, because the protocol that you're trying to do is just too taxing and then it makes you go back into your perfectionistic disordered eating tendencies. So for example, you might feel physically better on the autoimmune protocol, but then triggering your perfectionism and disordered eating symptoms when you're doing that autoimmune protocol. But then on the other side, if you just eat all the things, your autoimmune disease might actually flare, and then you're going to feel like crap and start beating yourself up because you knew you shouldn't have been eating those things, you know, heavy air quotes around this, and it's your own fault for causing the flare that you're now having. So that's the meat of this episode. I know you guys are going to enjoy it, and I just wanted to ask you for one thing because it's been a while. If you guys enjoy the podcast, if you could share it with one other person, I would love you forever. Because honestly, word of mouth is the best way to spread the word about the podcast. If you could leave a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, that would be also the best thing ever, because the algorithm on iTunes, kind of like the completely messed up algorithm on Instagram and Facebook, the only way to help more people actually find the podcast organically is now either between word of mouth referrals is obviously the best, because you should trust your friends and their podcast recommendations, except me, because a bunch of my friends love these like wine and crime podcasts or like crime dramas, and that's totally not my thing. Anyways, back on topic. The best way for you to help spread the podcast word organically through iTunes searches is through ratings and reviews. So, love you guys forever. Thank you in advance if you've already written a review. You guys are the best. Go enjoy the episode. What's been going on in your life since we last talked to you a couple months ago?
I'm really excited to be back talking about perfectionism and how much in my life that's played a role in disordered eating. And I wouldn't say it's played a role in my autoimmunity necessarily, but it's definitely been something that's been a struggle to get over while I try to heal. And so I'm excited to be back to answer some questions and to continue talking about how I'm implementing a lot of changes in my life in order to accept that I'm not perfect, and not only accept it, but go to the point where I celebrate the fact that I'm not perfect.
That is awesome. How have things been settling into living in New York in particular?
Is there such a thing as settling in New York? no, I absolutely love New York. It's definitely a shift coming from Houston, which granted Texas is not, you know, the old South by any means, but people are very engaging and very friendly, and you smile and wave to each other. And it's one of those things you just have to kind of create your own happy, calm space both mentally and emotionally, because you do not get that in New York. So it's been a really good adjustment. It's just taken time. And I think a big thing with me embracing my imperfection when I was younger, I would have tried so hard to try to make friends immediately, to try to fit in immediately, to try to find my place so that I felt safe. And in this case, looking back as someone in my mid-30s who's really explored, you know, imperfection and just, you know, the spirituality space, I've given myself time and kind of allowed space to see what happens rather than force it. And it's been pretty life-changing. So it's been fun. I just try to, outside of the days that it's, you know, 15 degrees outside and I just want to stay under the blankets.
Oh, yeah.
I've been enjoying just going out and exploring and meeting people I may or may not hang out with again, going places I may or may not go again, and taking that pressure off just makes it a really enjoyable experience.
Definitely. And I know I was really interested to hear about this part, because last time we talked about how a big part of using your eating disorder as a coping mechanism when you were younger was a kind of a cover up for chronic people pleasing, right? And that can be really hard to try and stay away from when you're in a new place, you have a new job, and you're trying to make new friends. So how have you been dealing with that aspect of it, aside from being like, well, I just don't care at all, so I'm not going to make friends?
Yeah. And it's obviously, you know, I'm a human being. I crave having connections with people. But I guess the biggest thing for me is I've noticed certain patterns I fall into. And if I can catch myself before I go down the rabbit hole of just full on people pleasing, then it's really helpful. An example being, if someone at work says, for example, they're into skiing. I skied as a kid, but I haven't been in many years because of my circulation, because of scleroderma. So I'll catch myself kind of just elaborating, I wouldn't say lying, but a little embellishing a bit about stories about skiing and doing things, because you have that just, I want to connect with this person. I want to be friends with this person. I want them to like me. And then as soon as I catch myself doing it, I almost laugh in my head. And then I just bring myself back down to what the actual story is and rein it in and realize, if you're going to just create this, you know, become a chameleon and put the colors on for whoever you are talking to in the moment, it works. People will definitely engage with you. I did it for many, many years of my life, but eventually you will be found out. And what's the point anyway? Because it's exhausting to keep up this image and these things that you're telling people. And yes, they may like you, but you're constantly in this state of anxiety because they don't know the real you.
Yeah.
So when I do catch myself doing little things like that, or I catch myself kind of staring at my phone, seeing, oh, did someone text me if they want to do happy hour, or oh, did one of my friends from home, you know, like something on Instagram, I just have to take a minute to breathe. In my case, I try to work on things I'm passionate about. I'll go take a yoga class or I'll work on my blog. But when you realize your triggers and you realize what you start doing, you can learn ways to snap yourself out of it.
Yeah. And then going a little bit more down that path, the chronic people pleasing for most people, right, is really tied in with this perfectionism, which then drives our behaviors around food and our bodies. And I've found, since I've moved multiple times, it's really hard to be a perfectionist or to have a background of perfectionism and to not slip into those old patterns, especially when you move to a new place or you start to a new job, because you want to give people, you know, the best impression of you, and you want to feel like you're wanted and productive at work and a valuable asset to the company or with friends. Like, you want to feel, especially when you're making new friends, is like, not only do you want to connect with that person, which can lead to these kind of like little white lies and embellishments and stuff, but you want that person to realize that like you are a valuable person to hang out with and you can add value to their life and they can add value to your life. And so how have you been dealing with the perfectionism aspect of all of this and like trying to make sure that you don't fall into, I just want to make everything perfect in my new life in New York?
Oh, completely. I definitely have to wear a slightly different hat. I wouldn't say mask, because I try my best to be very authentic now. But in work and in my professional life currently, because I work in finance right now, I do have to step it up a little as far as, you know, you're at the office. You have to hold yourself a bit differently than you would if you're out and about and socializing. But I've given myself a lot more grace at work. It used to be if someone made a comment on my slide deck or someone said, hey, you know, that was a great presentation or that was a great email to the client. Maybe next time you should do it this way. Just be grateful for the comment, because a lot of times it's someone more senior than you and what they're saying is actually fairly helpful. And even if maybe you don't agree, it's something that you should consider since they're at that company longer, might be in that role longer. And that used to make me crumble. It was like, oh my God, they hated my work. I'm terrible. I can't believe that this happened. And now it's, you know what? No one's perfect. There's always room to grow. And if you have that growth mindset versus that fixed mindset where the first time someone contradicts you, you feel just like a complete failure and you're like, oh my God, it's done. They know I'm not perfect anymore. If you can stay in that growth mindset space, then those constant anxiety driven thoughts about, do they like me? Am I good enough? Am I smart enough? Will start to slowly, slowly. They don't entirely go away. At least I'm not there yet. I'm not enlightened. One day maybe. But they'll slowly get quieter and quieter and you'll be more powerful than them. With my social life, it's like I said, I still catch myself sometimes. So I have to rein myself in. But what I've noticed that's been really freeing is the more just genuine I am about, you know, my day or my story. I obviously don't sit down with someone that's a new friend and tell them everything that I'm going to say on my blog or on this podcast.
Let me just word vomit onto you and then you can know all of my dirty secrets. And now do you want to be friends?
Yes, exactly. Like, here's all of my life's issues. But just being honest is so refreshing. And it's scary the first few times. Like, if someone tells you, you know, I really like this kind of workout, like, would you like it? And there's certain workouts, I'm going to be honest with you, I've tried a lot of them. There's some that just are not for me. I have zero desire to do it. And learning to say like, no, that's awesome though, but I don't think that's something I'm interested in. And you'd be shocked how many other ways you can connect with people. You don't need to latch onto something and feel like you need to be that certain way. And then accepting that some people are going to end up being amazing friends. Some people end up being acquaintances that you get along perfectly fine with. I guess you can call them like acquaintanceships, if you will. And then other people you just might not click with. And it doesn't mean that you're not worthy of, you know, being their friend or vice versa, but it's just not, you know, a great connection. And that's that. And at least you gave yourself some practice on meeting new people and discussing things with new people. So I try to keep that mindset. Obviously, I'm human. So there's times where you're like, oh, I thought I would hang out with those people again and it didn't work out. But then you end up meeting people that you get along with that much more. And that doesn't, when you're with them, it doesn't feel like that effort of, okay, I have to be on all the time. And those are the friends that I love being around, because when you can really just be yourself and relax, it's the most, you know, in my opinion, worth more than any, and I'm very pro therapy, but I feel like I get more out of that than any therapy session I've ever had.
That really reminds me of when you first go off to college and you have your first group of friends. You're like, oh my God, we're going to be best friends forever. And then like 3 months into school, you're like, oh, I don't talk to those people anymore.
Exactly.
You know, it's kind of just like a marriage of convenience or a friendship of convenience. And you hang out with this group of people and you think that they're going to be your friends forever because they're your first friends at school. And that would be such a like fairy tale friendship and everything like that. And then when you finally settle into realizing who you really are as a person and discovering who you are as a person and what your interests are, and that even if you say, no, I don't like the workout class that you like or you really enjoy or you identify as a part of your being, because people get religious about their workouts and stuff, it's not insulting to them to say, that's amazing for you and we can still be friends, but I'm more of a yogi than a CrossFitter or whatever it is. And that makes me think of like my oldest friendships with like some of my best friends from when we were three or when we were in kindergarten or elementary school. Like, I'm the only one, and this was part of my journey as well. I was always like the fit friend, quote unquote, and right. Mm-hmm. And like always obsessed with my food and obsessed with my exercise. It was driven by the fact that I loved sports and I loved competing and I loved just being active as a kid. And a bunch of my friends, even now that I've retained all the way through the years, like none of them do Olympic weightlifting like I do. None of them do CrossFit. They kind of think I'm half insane for like even lifting weights and stuff. And it's just not their thing. But I honestly think that it can make your friendship that much stronger if you don't have, you know, like that one common interest, but you have so much other stuff in common that really is you as a person. And you can just go that much deeper.
No, I 100% agree.
And then I really want to find out, and let's update people on how have things been going in your healing journey? Because I know you've been trying a bunch of different things lately, and like some of them have been working and some of them haven't mm-hmm. been working so well.
So that's an interesting thing too. I feel like one thing I'll note before going into it is it's when you go down a healing journey and you're looking at the alternative paths to healing, you definitely need to make adjustments in your life. At least I do. Like, I live in New York, so I have a budget. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult to be like, I'm going to do acupuncture and massage and ozone. And all of a sudden you're like, I don't have any money.
Yeah, right.
I can't go to the grocery store this week.
Now I can't be social anymore.
Yeah. So trying to, it's difficult because a lot of these methods take a while to work. It's not like taking a pill and suddenly things are better. So I've had to spend years kind of testing out what resonates the best with me and then investing in those and making the commitment to that. So the ones that have helped me the most recently, so ozone therapy has made the most difference. If we're going to look at it from a strictly scientific standpoint and nothing like anecdotal, that's made the biggest difference in my blood work and everything that I've been working on. I mentioned in the last podcast, I discovered that I had reactivated Epstein-Barr virus, and definitely think that's linked, if not the main cause of a lot of my issues, primarily Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So since I have been doing the ozone, my EBV numbers have gone down, and my thyroid labs have come back in a much more ideal range. So that's been great. The one thing I will say for anyone who's exploring that, I had pretty, I wouldn't say severe, but definitely serious detox symptoms as I was doing it. So I learned with my body, although what they tell you to do is just rapid fire, get it done, kind of kill the viruses, kill the pathogens. And yes, it does that. The ozone is great at doing that. But if your body does not detox well, and mine is very slow. I've learned this about myself. When I'm detoxing, I don't have one of those bodies where the next day all of a sudden I feel horrible. And then the next day you wake up and you're skipping in the grass and everything's great. Mine is a long sustained just mess of detox systems. So I've had to learn that I need to space out the ozone. I need to be prepared for what's going to happen after. You feel kind of like you have a mild flu and just have the teas ready, have my schedule cleared a bit, give myself that time and that space to deal with the detox. Obviously, in my opinion, it's worth it for me to feel a little bit crummy because it's clearly moving the needle with my health. So I'll continue to do it while it's still showing improvements. I just want to be always honest and forthcoming with anyone out there who's exploring that it's, you're not going to do it and then feel amazing. You will feel the detox. And everyone I've learned, I've talked to the physician that I do it with. He's had patients on the full, you know, spectrum of they have an immediate detox and then they feel great, or they're like me and it takes a really long time. Yeah. But that one's doing well. Acupuncture has been huge for me. I have to stay super hydrated beforehand. Again, with the being honest, I'm a little bit jumpy when they hit certain spots. And it's not really a needle phobia. I got over that a long time ago because I had to get blood work most of my life. But if I am not super hydrated and relaxed, it is not anywhere near as good of an experience for me. I still feel good after. Obviously, there's still the needle is still moving your chi, your energy. I feel great. But I've learned, like I said, similar with the ozone, I know what my body needs and I've learned how my body will react. And I've had to take the time to really listen to my body and feel into those experiences to know how to prep and then how to let myself recover after. So those two have been the most important. And then from a more strictly mental health aspect, I've talked about this, I believe, last time. But EMDR therapy, I continue to do that. And that's really helped me clear out, you know, for a really scientific term, clear out a lot of junk that's just been stored up for time. And for those who haven't tried it, it really helps you desensitize a lot of memories and issues you've dealt with that are triggers. And an example is I brought up something in a therapy session that happened, and this sounds silly, but girls that are listening to this can totally relate. In seventh grade, something really mean that my friends did, which is, you know, not that unheard of in seventh grade, mm-hmm. but it sounds silly. I'm 33, but if you had told me about that particular memory a year ago, you would have gotten a reaction out of me. It wouldn't have ruined my day, but it would have made me feel terrible in the moment and a little bit anxious. And now I could talk about that and not even flinch. And I definitely attribute that to that particular type of therapy. I think that it's just an excellent way to really get to the root of things rather than talk at the surface level for a very long time and not get to what is triggering that much, much deeper.
Interesting.
So those are the three that have helped me the most.
Yeah. So can you go into EMDR therapy a little bit more? Because I don't actually think we talked about that on the podcast last time. I know we talked about general therapy, but.
Okay. So it basically, it's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Yep, that is what it is. Make sure I said it properly. So you're engaging both sides of your brain while you do it. I've had it done two ways. I've had a therapist hold up two of their fingers and my eyes follow them as they kind of tick back and forth like a palindrome. I've also had a therapist, and this one I prefer because I'm a more visual person. So I like to be able to close my eyes as I'm going through what memories and thoughts come up. Where they'll put these two little plastic vibration tools in each hand, and it's attached to a machine where it'll jump, the vibration will jump from your left hand to your right hand. So you're still engaging both sides of the brain. So you'll discuss kind of an underlying thought, and there's a whole session, like the intro session to EMDR, where my therapist talked about, you know, what are some of these really underlying thoughts? Like I'll tell her something about my day, like, you know, I felt like a failure because of XYZ, and I felt like this because of XYZ. And they'll dig and dig until you get down to the root statement or feeling. And in my case, it's usually I am not enough or I am not lovable. And without going into too much detail, a lot of that comes from, you know, things that happened when you were very young or things that you were told, even if they weren't ill-intended, just things that you took on as a thought across the board about yourself and just kind of about life. So then they'll walk through giving you a safe place. Mine's always been the beach. I know some people it's the mountains. It can be a room in your house when you were a kid that you have happy memories, but mine's always just me alone on the beach, and they work on the visualization of you being there so that when you do dig into the tough memories, the issues that trigger you, at the end, they bring you back to that safe place so that you're not leaving the therapist office with all these emotions that just came up and, you know, ready to go to the office and try not to cry the rest of the day. But you work on setting that safe space. And then also, depending on what comes up in the session, you work on a container, in my case, kind of like a treasure chest, if you will, where you put whatever came up at the end of the session, if it's that triggering. Sometimes you can leave it out. You can put it into that container and you visualize shutting it and putting it away somewhere in the therapist office, again, just to make sure that that's your safe place. And then you can go out in the world and deal, not just that day, but in general. So then when you begin the process, you'll bring up a memory. She'll discuss, for example, the I am not enough, or she'll bring up what triggers you, like what's your underlying statement or belief about yourself. And then you'll bring up a memory where that really resonates. And I feel like everyone can think of a memory where something just really triggers you. And a lot of times it has to do with, you know, friends or family. And a lot of times it's when you were younger. And from there, they ask you to just go with it and explain what's coming up. And the thought is there's kind of these strings, if you will, of memories that are all attached and all have to do with that false belief about yourself and that fixed mindset about you're not enough, you're not lovable. You're not desirable, things like that. So when you're following those strings, those pathways through your brain, it is mind-blowing what comes up. I mean, I had things I haven't thought about in 20 years come just pop up into my head and just complete crystal clear, you know, just I could see it. I almost felt like I was in that situation in seventh grade with those quote friends that I had in seventh grade. And then it goes into, I would bring up things about my family. I would bring up these random memories about college, things about my first job, the first time, you know, you felt rejected, whether it be romantically or by friends or someone you cared about. And you go through all these. And then at the end of that particular session is when you come back to your safe place. And then you determine if you want to put those thoughts away or if you feel okay to leave them open. And it's tackled more in, I want to say I've done it maybe seven or eight sessions. And the amount of just weight that it's lifted has been amazing. Because I can talk all day about any issue. I obviously have a blog, so I love to write about things that I've been through and share them. And that's great. But in my experience, that wasn't really pulling the root up of what I was hanging on to. If you want to get into the spiritual space, it's like a lot of blocks. I had a lot of blocks to love and money, and I'm still working on those blocks. But this has been a way to really dig a lot deeper, a lot more quickly. And I would recommend it to anyone at all that's struggling with, you know, anxiety, depression, feeling like you're stuck. That was the biggest way to explain my mental space when I started this journey, is I just felt like, oh my God, I've taken these courses, I started a blog, I'm doing all these things, but I still feel stuck. Like, I need to feel unstuck. And this feels like one of the first, from a mental health perspective, one of the first methods where it's really helped me to get unstuck.
That sounds incredibly cathartic.
Yeah, it's amazing. I cannot recommend it enough.
And then, speaking of being stuck and like wanting to get unstuck, I wanted to talk about a different way of healing that you kind of experimented with. So I know you wanted to do a kind of healing cleanse, and you had fully planned to do it, like we're super prepared for it. And then you decided that you wanted to take a step back and not do it anymore. So can you talk us through what that journey was like and why you decided to take a step back?
Yeah, of course. So with the Epstein-Barr virus, the reason I got tested for that, and this is related, the reason I got tested for that was from the Medical Medium book that a family friend had recommended to me. And I dug my heels in the sand for a while and said, this is crazy, I'm not reading this. And when I did, it really resonated so much so that I got the blood work done. Turns out I did have Epstein-Barr reactivation. And the Medical Medium has a cleanse that's very specific to the thyroid. It's in their thyroid healing book. And it's incredible. I still think it's an amazing cleanse. Everything they recommend is phenomenal. They're telling you to eat whole, healthy foods, telling you how to rest. Nothing is, you know, take this crazy pill and buy all this, you know, these products that have our name all over them. It's not like that at all. So I do believe in the process. And it had these, I believe it's like step 1, 2, and 3, and you can stagger them how you want. And to their credit, or to his credit, in the book, it does say, if you can't do this all at once, feel free to just add little things in day by day. They were by no means being dogmatic about the way they expressed that you should do it. I, being the recovering perfectionist that I am, was like, I'm going to go full court press. Like, I'm in a good spot. I haven't had, you know, the eating disorder symptoms in a long time. You know, I'm writing this blog. I'm excited about my imperfection. I can do this. Like, I can totally handle this. No. No. So, not even close. So I had everything prepped. I went and got the food I made. Theirs is more about raw food, but in the winter in New York, I, to be quite frank, need to have something warm sometimes. So I made this huge stock pot of vegetable soup. I had all my apples ready in the morning. I had my celery juice ready. And I was just going. And then about 72 hours in, March Madness started. And I was at all these parties with my friends where they're ordering, you know, wings and beer and everything I'm not supposed to have. And I still don't really eat gluten just because it makes me feel really tired and crummy. But there's all these other foods that I really wanted. And oh my God, I can't have those. And then I, of course, after hanging out with people all day and having it in my face, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to have like one appetizer that I shouldn't have. And then I ended up eating a ton and feeling terrible. And then when I came home that evening, I went to that very dark place where for me, it's very dark, where I started to think, well, since I already ate that, maybe I can just like order a pizza and go ahead and eat that. And then I can just, exactly, just go down the rabbit hole. It's like, it basically the snowball effect. Well, I've already done this, so I'm just going to continue to just make terrible decisions. And that was my old pattern. And then I would, being recovering bulimic, I was petrified that I was going to do that and then throw up. And although I very much believe that relapses are part of recovery, and it doesn't by any means mean that you're back at square one, I would never make anyone feel that way because it's just not true. I did not want to go there because I've worked so hard to move forward in my life from that and to really face what was causing my eating disorder head on, that I did not want to be in that place. So I just went to bed, had some water, decided, you know, tomorrow's a new day. It's fine. You know, you made some decisions you didn't love. But then I realized, had I not been so restrictive and so just we use the word dedication because it sounds more positive, but I was just being a bit insane about what I was doing. It triggered that, and it basically just created the perfect storm for what happened that weekend. Had I been allowing myself to eat certain things, allowing myself to eat more warm food, being a little bit more relaxed so that it was not such a forbidden thing to have a drink or have an appetizer, I probably might not have even partaken in it. And even if I did, that's okay. But it wouldn't have turned into this, oh my God, I had one bite and now I'm just going to go be ravenous. Had I allowed myself to just have a little more freedom, it just creates this different relationship with food. Food's not evil. Food is part of your life. And having, you know, a little bit of alcohol is not, for me, not terrible. It's okay. And it just wouldn't have set the stage for the really just feeling out of control, which is kind of ironic because the whole reason you typically develop an eating disorder is you want to feel in control. But if I had given myself a little bit more grace and treated myself with a little more compassion in the process, that I would have not gone to that place. But I'm actually thankful it happened, because before this cleanse and reading about it, I was on this very strict, like, you're not going to do diets, you're not going to restrict, you're not going to be dogmatic. And I broke that. And I realized why I had that that open mind for myself in the first place. So it really let me revisit it. And now I am taking to heart the part of the cleanse that's, okay, make little changes every day. Nothing's going to totally derail you. These are the things that are especially helpful to avoid. But again, if you have them, it's okay. And just giving myself the room to make the changes, but not do it perfectly. And that was the main problem, is I was trying to do it perfectly so I could coast about my cleanse every day, like day seven, look what's going on, and add all these filters to the photo. Meanwhile, I'm like smelling food that someone has at their desk next to me and just wanting to like crawl into a ball. So it was good for me. It was a little bit of an ego check, but in the best possible way. So I feel like a lot of people listening, especially if they're following you, have tried to do these extreme cleanses or extreme diets, and it's rough. I don't recommend them to anyone that's struggled with an eating disorder, especially anyone that struggles with perfectionism, because it's the worst combination to go into it with.
Yeah, and I think that this was a super powerful experience, and like you said, a definite ego check, which like sucks at the time, but it's also terrifying when you come from this background, because on the one hand, like looking at both sides of the coin, right? Like this is a really good experience to have had, because it's realizing that even though you think you're, you know, recovered enough or wherever you are in your journey enough to do some kind of, whether it's a therapeutic elimination protocol or whatever it is. And like, there are legitimate reasons for you doing something like this, right? You're trying to get rid of the Epstein-Barr, you have autoimmune issues, you have all this other stuff. In a person who didn't have a history of disordered eating or an eating disorder, it would be hard enough as it is, right? But when you have a history of perfectionism, especially, you feel like if you can't do it 100%, then what's the point of even doing it? Because you're not going to get all of the healing, right? So then when you experience that and you had all the might as wells, and I really like how you said, if you hadn't put these rigid rules for yourself in the first place, you probably would have been able to have a couple of bites of something and then stopped there, because when you take away the restrictions, it's less like forbidden fruit and it's less like, oh, I can't ever have this. And then when you do have it, it's like, oh, might as well have this, might as well have this, might as well have this. And then that spot right there is terrifying to someone who has a history of bulimia or binge eating and everything, because your former response to that was, I'm just going to go purge, or I'm just going to keep eating. And then you get caught up in the shame spiral. But now you had this very crazy kind of moment of awareness of like, oh my God, I got caught in my old patterns. I know I don't want to continue in my old patterns and purge or continue to binge or whatever it is. So like, what do I do now? And it's just that moment of terror. And I think you made a really good decision of, you know, just saying, okay, this is what happened. I'm not going to beat myself up about it, because recovery is never a linear process, and relapses or whatever you want to call them, slip ups, like road bumps, basically. I think it's really important for people to realize that when you're a recovering perfectionist, or you had disordered eating, or you're a chronic yo-yo dieter, or you had an eating disorder, whatever it was, like progress is never going to be 100% linear. And I don't even know if it's possible to be 100% enlightened, right? To use a word that you used earlier in the podcast, because even if you're completely recovered from your eating disorder, there are going to be situations in which you are triggered and you immediately have those thoughts that you used to have that used to drive your behaviors. Now, you just know that, okay, the thoughts might come, but you know what to do with those thoughts in the sense that you don't have to act on them. They're not going to control your actions. They're not going to determine when your next meal is or what your next meal is or what you can't eat or how you should exercise. But you just realize like, huh, okay, that's interesting. Like that's a thought that I used to have in response to this situation. How can I spin this in a more positive light going forward? Because I know when you're kind of in that limbo between like trying to quit dieting and then trying to move forward in your recovery and like not really know in what stage you're in or anything, it's kind of a scary place to be because you're like, wait a minute, I thought after I stopped my eating disorder and I stopped having these thoughts and I stopped dieting, like I wasn't going to deal with this anymore. And honestly, I don't think it's a very realistic expectation for someone to have that. And I think it's really helpful for someone like you and all the other guests that I've had on the podcast to be super honest about this, because it's like, here's a person who's struggling with exactly what you're struggling with, or a lot of people are struggling with one of the things that you've talked about for whether it's multiple years or months or whatever it is. And it's so nice to have someone else to think like Brené Brown says, like, you're not alone. You're not the only one who's dealing with this. And it really helps to have an example of someone else that you can relate to and be like, okay, it's fine that I'm not, you know, completely there. I'm not completely enlightened. And it makes you feel a little bit better that like, I don't have to be completely 100% there in order to continue making progress.
No, completely. It's, just being able to open up about it too has been eye-opening about that. And I used to read Brené Brown before I would be honest and open with people and be like, oh, she's amazing, I love her. But I was petrified to actually implement anything that she said.
That sounds great in theory, but...
Exactly. It's funny, I don't know if it's an... I've always wondered this, like if it's an age thing or if it's just age happens to be part of it because you have to experience certain things before you just... I hate saying stop caring because I still care about so many things. But before you stop getting hung up on all the things that don't really matter, like what someone's going to think about when you share that. And if they think something negative, they think something negative. I mean, it's incredible. And it's funny that you said, you know, when you went into how she says to kind of be fully yourself and share your whole story, like the first few since I've started coaching clients, I was always afraid it would be off-putting to people that I had a variety of issues. Like, okay, Paige, maybe you should share your eating disorder or maybe you should share your autoimmune disease. But if you share all of that, people are going to think you're a hot mess. Like, why would you just like put it all out there like this? And once I actually did share everything, especially the first time I like fully shared it out verbally, like on your podcast, it's when I started getting more clients because these people... I was blown away. They're like, oh my gosh, I have an autoimmune disease and I struggle with an eating disorder and no one understands me because I try to find these diets and these approaches like AIP. And I'm not knocking AIP. I have plenty of people. I've known plenty of friends. Obviously, having an autoimmune disease, you develop a community of fellow people that have struggled with those health issues and AIP has helped them. But if you have a history of an eating disorder, it is such a restrictive diet that unfortunately some of these methods that help people who haven't had those struggles with food and their relationship with food and their body image, it's a nightmare. I mean, I tried to do AIP and I wanted to rip my hair out and it brought me back to thinking I was gonna binge and purge. And my point being, once I was honest about all of the issues and like my true story and how it's all interrelated, that's when I started connecting with people who really needed my help because it's honestly, it's mind blowing. I just thought, oh my God, no one's going to want to know all this. Like, this is just so much information. Like people are going to think you're nuts and it's just an overshare. And those are the people that reached out to me that had, obviously all of our stories are a little bit unique, but it seems to be this formula that I've heard again and again of people that you have a serious health issue, you develop a poor relationship with food and those feed off of each other, no pun intended there. And it's just an interesting position to be in because so many of the recommendations are not really mentally or emotionally safe if that's an issue that you struggle with. So I hope I didn't go too off topic there. But
no, not at all. And exactly like you said, it's a double-edged sword, right? Because if you're coming from the eating disorder community, the recommendations that they are giving to people who, you know, just quote unquote, heavy air quotes, have an eating disorder and not an autoimmune disease can work really well. But then if you go to the other side and you just have an autoimmune disease but not an eating disorder or disordered eating, which honestly is kind of few and far between, but if you just take the recommendations for the autoimmune protocol and the things that go along with that, that's not going to work well for someone who has an autoimmune disease and an eating disorder. So it's like trying to find the middle ground. And it's so powerful, again, that we're sharing our stories that, yes, I have an autoimmune disease. And yes, I had an eating disorder. And I'm trying to find the middle ground. And it's so hard because it seems like none of the recommendations that are out there or the practitioners that specialize in one side or the other are going to work for me. And It's interesting that you said that as well, because I had the exact same experience of when you're a practitioner, you kind of feel like you have to have your shit together before you can start working with people, in the sense that like you want people to think that you are fully recovered from all of the crap in your past so that you can start working with them, because you believe that they will think that you can't help them unless you're all the way there. But honestly, like, coming out and saying like, I did have an eating disorder, I did have, you know, I was a perfectionist, I do have an autoimmune disease, I'm still working through all this stuff, can be so powerful and can actually allow, like you experienced, more people to start reaching out to you because they realize you're a raw and open and honest person. And because you've gone through the exact same things that they are going through, that you're going to be able to connect with them on such a deeper level than a practitioner who might be a fantastic practitioner, but hasn't personally gone through this.
Oh, completely. No, it's just like when you say stuff like that, and then when I talk about it more and I work with clients, it's just so eye-opening that what is ultimately what I want to do with my life and help these people is something I kept so hidden, like painstakingly hidden for so long, that if you told me that this is what I was going to be doing, I'd be like, I would never tell anybody that. What are you talking about? That's going to mess up my whole, you know, persona and like my professional career and everything. But yeah, it's kind of amazing. It's crazy how you're, I say I'm not doing it to be, kitschy, because I have Imperfect Page as my business name and my blog name. It just happened to be, I love alliteration, so it worked out well. But it's your imperfections, I've learned, that connect you with people more than anything. I mean, when you're trying to connect with people over your, you know, resume and your perfections, quote unquote, you're not developing a real connection. But one thing that I did want to touch on when you were talking about just, I love how you did the air quotes for just.
Oh, the heaviest of air quotes.
Yes, completely. Because I watched, anytime obviously a documentary comes up on Netflix or something about eating disorders or autoimmunity, I kind of, you know, my ears perk up, so I check it out. And I saw something, it was an older documentary, and I forget which, if it was Netflix, Hulu, I have all of them, so insert whichever one it was. And it was, they were kind of, I'm sure the method there makes sense from a psychological perspective, but they were telling people like, just eat the cheese, it's fine. Or like, the reason you feel sick after you eat bread is because it's your emotions about the bread. And I'm like, this is what they mean. Like, this stuff doesn't work if you also have an autoimmune disease. And then on the flip side, like I said earlier, you have the AIP type diet and then it triggers your eating disorder. So I just feel like there's such an underserved population out there, especially of women, when you look at the numbers for disordered eating and for autoimmune diseases, that are just stuck because they're like, well, they're telling me to do this and that makes me sicker with my other issues, and they're telling me to do this and it triggers the mental health issue. So you're just the ping pong back and forth of, you know, what do I do? And then you end up just in this analysis paralysis where you read all these things, but you don't actually make any changes, and you don't want to share your story and open up with people because you feel like you're still sick or you're still messed up. And that was, I'm glad you had that insight too, because that was huge for me. I was waiting and waiting and waiting to work with clients and even to write my blog. And I was like, no one's going to want to read a blog about someone that's, I've solved everything and everything's perfect. Yeah. And this is me and it's not evolving. And then when I realized that, and I realized the blogs I loved writing were people that were telling me about their ongoing struggles and how as they get better and they start healing, you know, you hit another level of issues that you have to work through. It's just, like I said, that growth mindset. So I'm glad that that resonated, or that's something that resonated with you. Because your blog is one of the ones that was definitely inspiring to me, where it's like, just be honest and be okay about changing what you wrote about a year ago and saying, you know, that worked for me then, this works for me now, or this is where I am on my health journey then, this is where I am now, I'm still human. It's just really, really motivating.
Thank you. Well, I really appreciate that because that was not an easy thing to do. It's funny. I started my blog, it'll be 5 years ago in September, and like the stuff that I was writing about then is just like food for healing. But like, I didn't even talk about what I was healing from, you know, it's like, oh my God, it drives me crazy. But yeah, it's interesting what you said is like, you know, it's the middle between those two, and you can't really take, like, you have to take from both, but you can't really take from both, you know, the recovery from an eating disorder advice and then also the autoimmune advice at the same time, because on the, you know, psychological side, it's like, sure, you might start to have a reaction if you eat the bread or if you eat the gluten or whatever, fill in the blank that you've been restricting, and that can like start an initial reaction in your gut or with your autoimmune disease or whatever it is. But it's also because that specific food, say it's gluten, because gluten is very inflammatory for a lot of different autoimmune diseases, right? Like that, the proteins in that food can actually cause an autoimmune reaction as well. So like, yes, it can definitely be part psychological, but it's definitely part physical too. And then the like real problem kicks in is like when your body starts to have a reaction to this food that you're trying to allow in because you're trying to stop dieting and you're trying to be okay with your body. Then when you have an autoimmune disease, you're like, ah, why did I do this? Like, I know I react to this food. And then you start to get in the shame spiral and guilt and like hating yourself for doing that because you know it's not in the autoimmune protocol. So you're stuck in this middle position. You're like, what am I supposed to do? On the one side, people are telling me to eat one thing and like to stop dieting, but I know that if I were to eat more of these foods and exclude certain foods because of the autoimmune protocol or for my specific autoimmune disease or whatever other health conditions I have, I know I would feel a lot better, but I would also feel so restricted that I would then want to eat those things. So of course people are confused and it's so hard to be in this situation, right?
No, completely. And I've been there. So I completely understand. I'm sure you have too. It's difficult. And just the amount of information out there in general, I mean, I'm still obviously going through like the Institute for Integrative Nutrition program. I know you did it years ago. Mm-hmm. The amount of conflicting information out there, if you even strip away, I have an eating disorder and an autoimmune disease and I struggle with perfectionism and people pleasing, take all that, put it on the shelf, and you are a perfectly healthy person that's looking for the perfect diet, the amount of conflict out there with what you're going to find is insane. So that if you pile on top of that the issues that we're dealing with, it just makes it that much more difficult. So I just feel like there's so many people out there that, you know, you read all these things, and I'm naturally like academic by nature, so I love like digging in and reading what people are saying. And then at the end of all this, like, wait, what? Like, what am I supposed to do? So it's just all these people feel stuck. And it's funny. I feel like someone asked me, like, why would you go into health coaching? And I'm like, well, I also would love to eventually become like a licensed therapist or maybe just have some sort of training in that area. Because I do feel like a lot of when I've worked with clients, I'm getting started. But it's almost turned into like, they want someone to listen and they want someone that can relate. And I happen to have a certain set of life experiences and things that I've studied extensively on top of my own experience that makes them feel like they can truly be open because I quote, get it. But that being said, like people say, well, why health coaches? There's nutritionists and dietitians. I'm not knocking that. I have plenty of friends who have those certifications as well, but if all you're doing is telling someone these are the healthy foods, these are the unhealthy foods, like everyone can find that information.
Yep.
So it's what is keeping you from making healthy changes. And that's where I feel like the work begins.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And especially because, I mean, even at IIN, or if you do a dietetics program or if you do a nutrition program, and there are obviously many different ones of those, but sure, we learn about, you know, food for healing and what food can cause inflammation and how to do all these therapeutic protocols and stuff and the, you know, hundreds of different dietary theories that people can use. And like that alone is confusing enough. But then as a practitioner, like we don't unless you do continuing education or you like specialize in this track, there isn't a lot of information about eating disorders specifically, or like maybe it's like a module or a month long in your like multiple year grad school program, right? Or like at IAN, we like barely talked about eating disorders at all.
And yeah, so exactly.
It's like, okay, so you learn all these different diets and like these can be super healing and these are super healthy and you know all this kind of stuff, but then it's like, well, what about for the people who have disordered eating or eating disorders or like a history of yo-yo dieting? Why as a practitioner, if someone has a history of like doing really well with yes no foods or chronic yo-yo dieting and they're just continuously looking for the next thing, me giving them that next thing is not going to fix them or heal them. It's just going to perpetuate the problem.
Exactly.
Oh, it drives me crazy. No.
It's such a cultural epidemic too. It's terrible. I mean, I could go off and contributes to it, but it's just it's this crazy, crazy cycle. And I think it's interesting because people are so scared to talk about eating disorders, like so scared. And when you look at the statistics out there, to be quite frank, I think the statistics are so far off. It's not even funny.
Oh yeah.
Like 1%. Are you kidding me? like I could name like half my friends have had one.
Yeah.
They might not have been fully diagnosed, but they definitely had an eating disorder of some sort. So it's, I feel like people are afraid to talk about it because they think, oh, that only has to be handled by a very, very highly trained set of, you know, psychologists or psychiatrists. And don't get me wrong, like if you're talking about someone that is within pounds of potentially losing their life, like, yes, you need to be in a center and they need to be monitored and you need to make sure that they're okay. But there are so many people walking around every day that look healthy that you have no idea are obsessing about food and their body and doing things that are not healthy for themselves and in a way to deal with other issues they have, feeling out of control or stress or anxiety. And I feel like having the conversation, just having the conversation, period, I'll just say that, is going to help a lot of people. And I'm glad that you've created like a safe space so I can come and talk to you about this, because there's people who think that, you know, they're only 1% of the population. Like, this is weird. No one wants to talk about this. Like, I don't want to get help for this because I have to admit that I have this rare problem, and it's not rare. And it's something that people should definitely be able to discuss more openly. And one of the reasons I know, I'm sure you too, but one of the reasons I went into this field and continuing to pursue it is because I want people to know that they're not alone. I mean, like you said, I am a very much eating disorders, and the whole thing is about holistic health. And so if that doesn't give you an indication of how much of a taboo subject it is, I mean, it's yeah, I think it needs to be discussed more.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Well, I know we're running kind of over, and I know you have to get back to a client. I have to get back to a client. So thank you so much for coming on again.
Of course.
I always love when we chat. So before I let you go, please let people know all of the places where they can find you.
Sure. So my blog is imperfectpage.com. And my Instagram, very easy, at imperfectpage. And if you do subscribe to my blog, I'm going to start sending out an imperfect insight of the week. Obviously, I dig into all sorts of things about holistic nutrition. Also, I do a lot of non-toxic practices in my life that's helped me with my healing. And then I do share things on more of a mental, emotional, spiritual, just that entire realm, where I'll go ahead and share insights, things that I come across that I think would be helpful to people who like reading about, the healing journey that I'm going through. And also right now I'm taking on new clients. I have a few who I just finished with. So I'm offering, half off my coaching packages, but those are all done through discovery calls. And I do have a coaching page on the site where you can find that. So I look forward to connecting with anyone who's curious about exploring their own healing if you're dealing with autoimmunity, eating disorders, perfectionism, or all of the above, like I have. So thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be here, and I love being able to connect with your listeners.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends, and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes, and come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.